Welcome to The Corner Table, a podcast about food and drink in Madison, Wisconsin, produced by the Capital Times. I am your host, Lindsay Christians, food editor at the Cap Times. We are going week by week with Bravo's Top Chef Wisconsin, which was shot last summer in Madison and Milwaukee. My first guest this week is Pete Biscaino. Pete is an advisor for the Hoofer Outing Club and the Hoofer Riding Club at UW-Madison. Union South at UW has been hosting Top Chef watch parties every Wednesday. Pete and I talk about the Carson Gully Challenge and the little Wisconsin things we've noticed. Then I am delighted to share my chat with Tori Miller, chef at L'Etoile and Gray's. Tori was a guest judge at the Farmer's Market Quickfire on the roof of L'Etoile, and with his wife, pastry chef Christine Miller, they joined the judges' table at the Harvey House for the Supper Club Challenge. If you want to know what happens when judges disagree or which dishes Tori thought were best and worst of episode 5, we are hashing all of it out. This week's episode is a little longer than usual, but I promise it's worth it. There are spoilers ahead for episode 5, that's the Farmer's Market Harvey House episode, but not episode 6. If you need to catch up, find previous episodes of Top Chef on Peacock. They go up there the day after they air on Bravo, typically by midday on Thursday. Give a listen. Cheers! Hello, Pete. Welcome.
Hi, Lindsay.
I hear that you might be a Top Chef super fan, or at least a fan.
Say big fan, big fan. I have seen just about every episode, all the seasons. Didn't watch them all in real time, but that was we got super into them during the pandemic and then have been keeping up with them ever since.
What was your reaction when you heard that Wisconsin was going to be featured this season?
I immediately called my wife and we geeked out big time. And then it was calling the family, geeking out with them. And then the next call was to the Memorial Union Communications Director and the Director of the Wisconsin Union Directorate Cuisine Committee to figure out how we could get them to the terrace.
I mean, the terrace is where they got the idea for the Carson Gully Challenge. It just came up organically in a conversation there.
That's so cool. It's iconic. I mean, you can't see a highlight of Madison or B-roll of Madison or any film. I mean, it always the lead in is over the lake, our sailing piers, the terrace chairs, you know, the Red Gym, the Memorial Union. Like, it is quintessential Madison.
Tell me a little bit about your role at UW, like what your day job is.
Yeah, so not super related to anything food, but I am an advisor to two of our outdoor clubs, the Hoofer Outing Club and the Hoofer Riding Club. So do a lot of backcountry culinary cuisine. So
nice. Are you a UW grad?
I am not. I'm not. I'm actually not from Wisconsin. I'm a transplant. So I grew up down in Clearwater, Florida, and throughout my life have slowly been making my way north. And I'm here and I love it. This is the best place I've ever lived. I love the city, the state. Being in the Midwest is where it's at.
Nice. So this is an adopted home for you. How do you think it's been showing up so far in the season of Top Chef?
It has been amazing to see. I have so much love for this state and so much pride in this state. And seeing, you know, them hit all the big highlights has been super cool. Like, you know, everything in Milwaukee and cruising around Madison. But it's the little stuff that I just fanboy over. And the stuff that is the funniest to me is the things that aren't like super important, you know, like them showing footage of the contestants driving on the Beltline. Just makes me laugh because, like, you know, you think like, oh, they're just cruising around on the Beltline like the rest of us. So
celebrity chefs, they're just like us.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this past episode had Madison, both parts of it, all Madison, starting off with the challenge on the top of L'Etoile. That seemed to me to be a pretty challenging challenge as challenges go. Like, some of the sauces were pretty out there, or they were older recipes from the 50s, not ways that maybe we cook now. So what was your response, your thoughts about that challenge?
First, I was super happy that they highlighted Chef Gully for something other than fudge bottom pie. While fudge bottom pie is awesome, and I will eat a whole one to myself. Seeing them, you know, give him his flowers for things other than that was really cool. And the raisin sauce that Michelle had was about as fair as giving a contestant cheese curds during the cheese challenge.
Oh my gosh.
Not an ideal thing. And having to create all of those sauces in such a short amount of time, not an easy challenge at all. But it was really cool seeing them highlight the farmer's market too, and wish some of the contestants would have been able to use more of the items that they got.
Yeah. So I got to go behind the scenes for that challenge up on the roof there. And one of the things that was interesting to me is they asked all the contestants, like, what did you get at the market? And a bunch of them said basically the same things. Like, they all got some kind of onion or allium. They were getting peppers because peppers were really in season. So a bunch of them got those kinds of things. And I thought it was really funny that they cut that, because they were, several of them just said the exact same produce, which I thought was kind of funny.
I did see in the, you know, the montage of them shopping, Laura grabbed a loaf of Stella's hot cheese bread. And I was like, yes, someone needed to. But then I don't even think she really got to use it. And maybe she made her croutons with it, but good for her for going for Stella's and potentially waiting in line, burning up some of her challenge time there.
Yeah. I mean, they were moving through the crowd so quickly, and there were all of these cameras moving along with them. So the chefs are running and the camera people are running, but they have those big cameras on their shoulders and they can't see on that side of their body, right? It's blocking their vision. So they have to be really careful with how quickly they're running and where they're placing their feet too, because you don't want to take a tumble with a camera like that.
Oh, absolutely. I did appreciate Dan and his mentality about it of just, I'm not running. I can't run. Yeah. Don't want to do it. And just taking the leisurely stroll. That's how the market's meant to be enjoyed.
Yeah. The farmer's market is such an iconic thing in Madison too. And we all kind of knew that they would have a farmer's market challenge, but do you think other people are going to have the familiarity with Carson Gully that maybe you do? And I knew of him as well, but I don't feel like maybe contemporary foodies are aware of his legacy.
I don't think so. And to full disclosure, the only reason why I know of him is because before I worked here with Hoofers and Outdoor UW, I worked with University Housing, and I was in Carson's Gully quite often, the dining hall named after him. And so that's how I knew about him and had researched him, you know, when I was working over there. But even Michelle spoke on it in the episode, saying that she didn't know him, but talking about the strides that he made and what he was doing in the 50s before, you know, when Black chefs weren't doing anything like that, I thought was a good edit by the producers to toss that in there. But if anything, it brings awareness to, you know, local chefs like that.
Moving on to the Supper Club Challenge this past week, it struck me as a real lift to try to get the essence of Supper Club culture with a $1,000 budget for 50 people, and also with those really fine dining elevated plates, where to me, supper clubs are about abundance. There's always so much at a supper club. Everything comes with, and it's just this very abundant meal. And to try to translate it into fine dining seemed really tough.
Not only did they have to do that, but with that budget and having to, I really appreciated them having to shop in the world's smallest Whole Foods. It warmed my heart to know that they had to struggle through those little aisles like the rest of us have. Was great. And then my jaw dropped when Danny's team was checking out and not a single person offered to put anything back. Just left them hanging there. Oh, that frustration was real, and I felt it.
It was, yeah. And he was mad, and he had good reasons to be mad. And they were apologizing to him, but like, this is a competition, and you just screwed him. Like, you, yeah. I did have Charlie's fish, and it was very disappointing. It was really mushy, and I like Charlie so much. And I was like, this is such a bummer, but it was really not good. But also, like, Kevin's beef was cold. Like, it was not, it was red. It was like jiggly.
you know?
Oh, no.
And I like medium rare, but I was like, oh, goodness, this is a lot. But the idea that they had to shop not only at a tiny Whole Foods, but at expensive Whole Foods. Whole Foods is expensive. You've given me $1,000 to feed 50 people at Woodman's, and I will do that for you. Like, we will make it work, and I will figure some stuff out, and there will probably be some beans on the menu. But, like, still, right? Having to do a supper club menu with Whole Foods, chefs can find all kinds of different ways of ordering in bulk and getting a better deal on an ingredient or a bunch of ingredients because they're ordering from distributors. But something like Whole Foods, they're shopping like the rest of us. Like, those are the prices that grocery shoppers have to pay at a place like that. And it didn't seem very fair to me for the challenge.
No. And it was amazing what some of them were able to come up with on a shoestring budget like that. And, you know, thankfully, Danny was resourceful enough to pull together enough ingredients. But I thought this episode gave us two of the most interesting feedback from a judge and the highest feedback from a judge. Backtracking a little bit, but to the L'Etoile challenge, W. Kamal Bell saying that Michelle's dish was like Taylor Swift and Slipknot happening at the same time. I don't know if I've heard a better critique of anyone's food ever in the 21 seasons of Top Chef. That had me literally laughing out loud while watching the episode.
And that's great.
And then Dan's relish tray. I mean, Gail's comments on it and, you know, Tom saying that it was flawless. Like, I mean, that's as good as a Paul Hollywood handshake. I mean, that is like you can't get higher praise on the show. And it was so, so cool to see Dan achieve that as our local guy.
I loved that. I also loved when, speaking of Kamau Bell, when he was talking about the fourth leche, like breaking the space-time continuum. And I was like, man, this is great. This is why, you know, we bring in famous people to do these kinds of judging gigs because they're funny and it's good TV. I was thinking, too, about the fact that there's not a lot of fresh protein at the farmer's market for them to use. So the fact that Rassica grabbed brats made sense to me. And eggs, there's a lot of eggs, because if you want to get whole protein, it's going to be frozen at the farmer's market for good reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because it gives you a little time to be able to make it, but also because we have a real lack of small-scale meat processors in the state. So that's all coming into play with what's available at the market. And I love seeing the fun, like a little jalapeno popcorn on the top of this, or, you know, I'm going to use this pepper and I'm going to turn this into breadcrumbs instead of doing like a full on schnitzel or breading of the Rahmschnitzel. I thought that was really cool too. I do feel like Michelle kind of keeps pulling the short straw. So she got the ginseng. She'd never worked with that before. She hadn't made pasta in years. In the first episode, she was like, I don't know if I know how to do this. Then she got shafted on not having enough pineapple. And she got the raisin sauce. Like, talk about a team player.
Absolutely. She is someone if I could go back and redraft my fantasy team, 100% would have taken her.
The Supper Club challenge that they did, the Harvey House had to kind of make them a meal. It felt pretty representative of Supper Clubs. I feel like a challenge we haven't seen yet that I would like to see is related to the old fashioned. Like, we haven't seen an old fashioned challenge yet, and I don't know if we will. But is there a challenge that you would like to see that feels particularly Wisconsin that we haven't seen yet?
For me, it would be probably German food or some kind of Scandinavian food or something around maybe maple syrup.
Ooh.
You know, I know there's constraints with them going around to different parts of the states, but seeing something in the Northwoods and syruping or something around there, I think would be cool to see.
There are still watch parties happening at UW for another few weeks, right?
Yes.
People can come to those?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So the Wisconsin Union Directorate Cuisine Committee does a watch party over at Union South every week. They have games and they do questions and like kind of trivia throughout. They really utilize the commercial breaks, and you can win some of the Babcock Dairy ice cream and other fun treats that are over there, and it's free to attend.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This is a pleasure.
That was Pete Biscaino, an advisor to the Hoofers Outing and Writing Clubs at UW-Madison. If you're a student or otherwise close to campus, the set at Union South is hosting Top Chef watch parties every Wednesday through the end of the school year. Visit union.wisc.edu for more info. The Corner Table podcast is sponsored by Garver Events. Come to a Top Chef Wisconsin watch party on Wednesday, May 8th, held in the Garver Feed Mill Atrium at 3241 Garver Green. The party is free and open to the public, with food and drink available for purchase from the Garver Lounge, Ian's Pizza, and Roleplay. On May 8th, Table Wine's Molly Moran will interview me, Lindsay, about going behind the scenes during Top Chef tapings. Our chat starts at 7 p.m., with the episode airing at 8 p.m. See you there! Next is my interview with Chef Tori Miller. Tori judged the Farmer's Market Quickfire on the roof of L'Etoile and sat at the judges' table at Harvey House for the Supper Club Challenge, accompanied by his wife, pastry chef Christine Miller, whom the judges frequently turn to for perspective on the Supper Club desserts. As I noted up top, this is a slightly longer interview, but Tori, who is an Iron Chef competitor and a James Beard Award winner, may be the single best person in the city of Madison to talk about this show from all sides. Give a listen. Hi, welcome, Tori.
Hi, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is a beautiful day in Madison. It was a beautiful day when we filmed at the top of L'Etoile. What was it like for you to get ready to have all those people on the rooftop there?
I mean, it was pretty crazy. You know, we definitely weren't, we were like, yeah, when we first started talking about maybe filming together and being a part of it, they were like, we have 250 people in our crew. So do you have room for that? And I was like, of course, you just are like, yeah, sure. You know, and then as time progressed, they were like, okay, so we're going to do it on the roof. We want to build a kitchen up there, and we got all the building approval and we did all the stuff. But then there was like all this kind of infighting between like the producers and the actual people that were going to build the kitchen. And they were like, we're going to be in Spring Green the day before until this time. And we're supposed to get here and build this whole kitchen and be ready for market. So there was some, maybe we can't do it talk. And that's the thing with Top Chef. I mean, they roll with 250 people for a reason. So they were able to just split their crew and show up and do the thing. And so that part was crazy. We had to rent out like two separate conference rooms from the building. And then on top of that, use our entire dining room and private dining room of L'Etoile to house equipment and bodies and that sort of stuff. So that part was pretty crazy. And ultra BTS was like, I had 4 weeks before filming and I was like, I want to drop some weight. So like, then I just started like working out and like eating like, you know, like a normal person, I guess, instead of like, like me normally. So like, I gave myself 4 weeks to drop 25 pounds and did it. And that was intense, but that was my preparation for filming for Top Chef. So, which was way more than Christine got because she only had like 4 days or something like that before we filmed. And it was like, hey, we'd love it if Christine came. And she was like, say what now? And then, so she was like, I'll eat after the filming or during it. And then she like went and bought a bunch of dresses and it was an intense week.
Oh my gosh. She was on camera a lot too. Like they asked for her opinions
so
about
great.
The pastry. Yeah. Oh gosh. That's so funny. So basically you showed up that morning, like hungry and
yeah, basically hungry and kind of angry and like ready to eat and do some judging.
The thing that I remember you talking about at the time is you had the little like earbud in and they would say something like this, but in your own words.
Right. It was very, the quickfire was weird. I got to tell you because we were, you know, it's like, you're not allowed to react while you're there. So then it just comes off as like, you're silently eating. And then they're like, you can say like, or then they would feed you a line like, how did you find the challenge? You know, so you're just kind of like saying what they're telling you to say. But then with the line in the beginning where I was just kind of like, Madison's the capital of Wisconsin. Like that one, they were just like, try to say something like, Milwaukee's cool, but Madison's cool too. And I was like, so like what came out of my mouth was like, we're the capital for a reason. And we're going to, you know, Top Chef is going to see like how great Madison is and et cetera.
And joining him is Madison's very own James Beard award-winning chef, Tori Miller, whose restaurant L'Etoile is right beneath our feet.
I know you guys have been spending a lot of time in Milwaukee, but Madison's the capital of Wisconsin for a reason.
You just shaded Milwaukee. You just...
I felt like Kamau kind of said what he wanted to say, which comes off as so much more organic. And you're normally like that too. Like it felt like they were trying to be very specific about like what you're allowed to say when. I wonder why they don't want you to react to the dishes. That's a thing that's pretty consistent across the board with the show, is that when the judges have dishes, they try to be kind of poker faced.
Well, I feel like it's more for the contestants. You know, like they're like, well, we don't want them to know until the end. Because even on some of them, when like this season where they're like, you know, we'd like to see Dan and Manny or whatever. And it's like, oh, man, I thought I did so good, but maybe I didn't, you know, sort of a thing. It would have been a lot more freeing if they could have just been like, ask about the dish, but don't say whether or not you like it or not. But it felt like they had very specific even moments of sound bites that they wanted to get after trying everything. So that part was kind of crazy.
The challenge seemed pretty difficult to me. There were certain sauces where I was like, herb sauce, cool, whatever. Like that seems like you could do almost anything with it. But like the sauce with the hard boiled eggs, I was like, I guess sauce gravish has hard boiled eggs. Like,
yeah, egg sauce was weird. I was so mad. I told him too. I was so mad at Danny Jacobs because I was just like, dude, you had tartar sauce and like, where was it? Like, where was the tartar sauce, first of all? And like, you could have done so many things with it. And like, I just wanted to taste it. But then like, yeah, herb sauce was, we had a lot of discussion in the short amount of time that we had for judging the quickfire, because the dish that won with the Creole sauce was ultra delicious. We were all just like, oh my God, this is so good. But then we were like, okay, so he's, you know, Haitian, he's from New Orleans. He used a potato and like from the market, like there wasn't a lot of like market incorporation. And it wasn't a whole dish. So I was just like, Kristen and I were going back. Oh my God. Kristen and I were kind of going back and forth on it because I didn't think that while it was the most delicious, I didn't think it did the challenge.
Oh.
As far as like incorporating the market and being a whole dish, where other people like herb sauce, like Laura made like a really delicious, used a ton of fresh vegetables and had a ton of summery and spring flavors. And the herb sauce was delicious. So like, I don't think that one was, we were all just kind of like going back and forth. And then there was some like the raisin sauce where, you know, Michelle clearly had like a plan when she bought her market ingredients. She's like, I'm making this frittata no matter what. And then she did, and then tried to serve it with raisin sauce, and it was disgusting. So
poor Michelle. I felt bad for her because I was like, woof, that's in the little cut in the episode, she's like, why is this a recipe?
Yeah, no, it if you read it as if it's kind of like A1-y and like A1 steak sauce, and it just, you, she had to pivot out of that egg bake with goat cheese and stuff, because like it just totally clashed. Two polar opposites for what we're eating.
I thought it was really amusing that when, I think it was Kristen said, so what did you guys get at the market? And several people said the same things over and over. Like you'd be like, oh, you all got alliums. A bunch of people got peppers. Like it's what looks great at the market on that late August day.
Right. And also, you know, like we had obviously scouted the market to give them the closest places to the restaurant. So it ended up being, you know, a lot of Love Food and a lot of Young Earth, and like that first whole block is kind of all diverse and great, but then everyone kind of hit the same places and they were taking all the same stuff. So it was like, yeah, like all the peppers and onions. And I was surprised because like only one person got like peaches and plums, and you know, like there was a lot of fresh stuff out there.
Savannah seemed to really love the challenge.
Yeah, Savannah really loved it. I'm thinking about who got the brats.
Oh, Rasika.
Yeah, Rasika. She was legit thinking we were going to be like, you have to switch bags. So she was buying stuff that she didn't even want to use.
she was going to give to somebody else.
Yeah. So that's why she bought like the weirdest combination. She bought like granola and bratwurst and like no fresh herbs or anything. She bought the popcorn. She ended up using everything, and her dish wasn't, by far wasn't the worst, but it also wasn't great.
Yeah. I have to say the Rahmschnitzel did look rough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that wasn't good. The salty shrimp was like, was really, really salty. I actually didn't like Manny's succotash either, but only because like it felt just like a tomato sauce.
Mm.
And it didn't feel summery and light. And I was like, why are you using canned tomatoes when you have all these fresh tomatoes? Which again, like this was all behind the scenes when we were like kind of having our discussions. And I don't know how they normally do it, but I feel like Kristen has a very specific, I don't want to say mission, but she has a very specific viewpoint when it comes to judgment for those quick fires. And she definitely was like, I like Danny's, but everyone was like with the yogurt sauce. And everyone was stuck on him not pickling the cucumbers enough. And I was like, I think the dish is actually delicious. The sauce is delicious. It's fresh. It's bright. It's seasoned. Texturally, it was amazing. And she was just like, but it wasn't a pickle. Why did he call it a pickle? And I was like, well, the succotash wasn't a succotash either. So like we were like standing in the lobby of like where the elevators are upstairs, just like having this discussion. And then that's when the producers just come in and they're just kind of like, so it sounds like it's down to these. And then we're just like, yeah, fine. It just came down to what we all felt was like, obviously like it was the most delicious one, but it would also, you only had, oftentimes when you're eating something, if you only have one bite of it, like an amuse bouche in the restaurant, we always try to make it one big bite of food that has tons of flavor, tons of texture. And then as soon as you're enjoying it, it's gone and you wish you had more, but you don't. And that gets you ready for the next course. And that's like exactly what his dish did with that Creole sauce.
Do you think that the dishes that go later have a disadvantage?
I thought that they might, but I definitely feel like the first ones we had were judging them and as harshly as the ones in the end, but it definitely was helpful that, you know, we had a production person being like, okay, so this dish had this and this at the time we said this and this about it. And then kind of were able to go over it again in our minds, because you definitely, after tasting 10 plates of food in a short amount of time with cameras in your face, you're kind of like, what just happened?
I think the minute you put a camera in my face, I sort of like forget my own name. Like it's, I'm thinking so much about how I appear and how I'm coming across that it's hard to remember that I'm there to do something on right. That camera. Kevin had a rough day. He did that Rahmschnitzel, and then he also had the beef that was practically raw. There were some dishes at the Supper Club Challenge that I thought really swung and missed. We have audio, like my friend Kristen and I were sitting up at the bar and we have audio of just her saying, if I got this fish dish, Charlie's fish dish, I would be sad. Like if I got this at a supper club, I would be sad because it was just so mushy. And there were several instances where the salting was off and it just, I think I was hoping for more from the Supper Club Challenge overall. And I wonder how much do you think that the budget played into that? And what was your sort of takeaway overall with how they handled that challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I would completely agree. I think that, not to discredit, I mean, Top Chef is very hard. A lot of people don't know. It's like literally the next day they're doing another two challenges. They have to say goodbye to one of their friends that they made and then go right back into it like immediately. There is no like, it's grueling, you know, and you have to be creative constantly for the whole thing. So with that being said, you know, after we filmed it, I was just kind of like, so what is this? Like this, they did not show their best, I don't think, in either necessarily, which a quick fire, you can't really be like, wow, this wasn't great. But going into the Supper Club, having $1,000 budget and not being able to work as a team to create actual dishes that reflect, you can't just be like, well, I'll do beef, that's Supper Club. You know, we were so mad, and that like wasn't shown on the episode, but Tom and I were so mad about the sous vide on the steak. And then we were so mad about just like tenderloin and potatoes with jus and chives. you could have gone any number of ways with that as far as like being supper club, whether it would be like a classic side, like cream spinach even would have gone a long way to like do something. And I get like Manny gave up his vegetables for the crudité for Danny, but it was like, you have to be able to pivot harder than just being like, I guess I'll just do sauce and mashed potatoes then with this janky steak. And you have to remember, it's like you're shopping at a grocery store. I mean, Whole Foods is what it is, but you're still buying grocery store beef that isn't necessarily the quality that you're going to buy for a restaurant. So if you treat it exactly the same way, it's not going to come out the same. And there was all that, like there was also behind the scenes, like with my fish from Kevin, like I had a bone in mine and it was horrible. So we were, but the thing about it was with that dish, I said, I was like, at least he made the picolese and at least he did the sauce.
The coconut sauce I thought was good. Yeah.
It was beyond just mashed potatoes and like a salsa verde, you know, especially since knowing like Manny was going for like carne asada.
Yeah.
I was like, grill that thing then. Do something. Give it flavor. Do you have a chance to like make your food, but make it supper club. And then everyone else I felt like was kind of playing it safe.
Yes.
You know, making chicken katsu. They literally were served a chicken katsu, like a schnitzel, when they ate Chef Joe's food. And then they just were like, you know what I'm going to do? Make, you know, chicken katsu. And it's like, I get like that was something for Amanda that she makes all the time. And that's why she wasn't up for, I mean, that was a part of the discussion. It's like, well, she makes this, you know, for her pop-ups or whatever. And I was like, well, you can't discredit that. It was yummy. But like overall, I felt like Dan Jacobs, like he from the jump was like, this is the best thing that we've had. And then while we were eating everything else, it was just a slow decline after that first relish tray, because I was just like, wow, this is just getting worse and worse. You know, when we're driving home, we're just kind of like, none of that was very good. And, you know, again, like not to discredit the work that they had to do it. But I do think that when you're in a competition like that, as soon as it's team challenge, you kind of have to take yourself out of it and be second to the team. And whether that's being flexible with your budget, but not flexible with your, you know, like pivoting off your dish. Then if you have to remove something, don't remove something that's going to make your dish better. Just do something differently that's maybe cheaper.
The dessert that Laura made that referenced the old fashioned, I was like, oh, we have an old fashioned reference. Oh, good. Okay. Like, this is something like, because that's so iconic for Wisconsin supper clubs. I'm a huge supper club nerd. I love them so much. And we go all the time.
Yeah, me too.
And I was really excited to see that reference. I thought the grasshopper milk was weird. Like, it just was weird and it didn't really go. And the fact that she took up so much of the budget for that dessert.
Right.
I really appreciated Christine's comment at Judge's Table that we got, which was like, it's the texture is wrong. This isn't great. I'm still going to eat it all.
The moment you've all been waiting for.
Will we destroy the space-time continuum by adding a fourth leche?
Christine, as the pastry chef, what do you think?
I was so excited about it, but definitely too soggy, definitely too much of the milk mixture. Very sweet. I'm going to eat it all. Obviously.
I feel like we were all like, oh, yeah, okay. Like,
yeah,
we would all be the same. We'd be like, this is disappointing. I'm going to eat it, but.
I mean, that was completely where we were. It was just kind of like everything was just fine, except they didn't go together. So it made it weird.
Yeah.
You know, when we first were served it, I was like, oh, we're going to pour this over. And that would have made it even worse. But then I was just like, why are you serving these two completely different things? And that's my general rule. Like, since the early days of Top Chef, you know, like I would say you learn very early on when you're first introduced to, like, as an audience member, like these chef competitions, as soon as you see someone doing like lamb three ways or, you know, carrots three ways or whatever, you're just like, dude, you're going to fail. Do one thing, do it right. And that's it. And as soon as I saw the two things, I was like, if they don't go together, I don't know why you spend time doing two dishes, especially since one was in a weird little ramekin.
Yeah. I thought like the pacing was, they had to be very deliberate with the pacing because each chef had like a very hard deadline. Like
right.
They had to get stuff out and you could see them moving back there and getting everything ready. I know that it's so visible and there's so much pressure. Did it feel similar to you as when you've done things like the Iron Chef competition that you did? In what ways did it feel different, I guess?
It felt like the Iron Chef in a lot of ways, just because like the time doesn't stop. Like once your time is going, you just have to that clock is live. Everything that happens during that time, like you can't fix it. You can't switch it. You got to just go with it. And I know that they're going through that same thing. And it was the same, like we're, for Top Chef, you know, it's like we had 20 minutes to cook our first dish when I was battling to even battle Bobby Flay. And all they did was show us the potatoes. And then they gave us 10 minutes to run around the kitchen. And then they were like, and action. And then you're back on, you know? So like, those are the only breaks. And I know for Top Chef, like they didn't get those. So it's even more so like, you know, your hard deadline, you know, when you can start and you just got to get it all done. So I know like in that way, I feel like they're doing really well managing time during the challenges. But with that being said, I feel like they're also like not living up to, they're not hitting the mark necessarily to actually execute the challenges at a higher level. So hopefully we start to see some more of that.
Yeah. I got a chance to talk with some of the judges after the challenge was done, and Tom sounded like mad. Like he sounded frustrated and he sounded mad. And I was like, this is a tone. Like, you know, because he's answering all the questions that the media always has, which is, you know, like why Wisconsin and what do you like here and blah, blah, blah. But I asked him, is there anything in specific that you have to do to prepare to judge a supper club challenge? Because supper clubs are iconically Wisconsin. And he said, I know how to properly cook beef. I know what properly cooked beef looks like. And it wasn't that, you know, but he sounded just frustrated at how I think the challenge had gone. There were some comments about the budget and maybe it was too low, like overall, but
I just don't think that people understood like how to budget for 40 plus the judges, you know, so essentially 50 people with 1,000 and then everyone's doing their courses. Like I said, I feel like if they would have, you know, thought outside the box on actual, instead of just being like, well, I got to do beef, so it has to be a steak. You know, it doesn't have to be. Thinking about caviar sauce, like it's great in theory, but like caviar, because caviar and chicken is delicious, but then you don't have it in the budget to get $50 ounces of caviar, you know, so then it's just like not going to carry. So why is it even in there? You just wasted $100,
you right,
know, of your night, a tenth, you know? So it's like, you got to really rethink that sort of stuff. And then I understand like being like, okay, I want to do this, the cocktail and like all the stuff. Like she was buying so much stuff. You know, even looking at it, you're just like, okay, why do you need that? You know, you're going to need like an ounce of that bottle of Four Roses, which I get, like they're shopping at Whole Foods. They don't have like all kinds of bourbon, but I know that they got to have something cheaper than that. That's still going to give you the vibes of old fashioned. So
yeah,
I definitely think that budget played into it more than time in this instance, and more than creativity.
Yeah. For both of the challenges, the sauce challenge and the supper club one, if you were competing like Dan, which sauce would you have wanted? Which course would you have wanted?
Oh man, I feel like I would have wanted tartar sauce only because like I love it so much and it goes well with everything. And I may have ended up doing like Frito Misto or something like that with tartar sauce. I think it would have been just like so fire and like fried herbs and like all that sort of stuff. Like in the moment, that's what I was like hoping for, was like something like that. But then, like I said, I was like, where is the tartar sauce? Like, I like the idea of smoked egg tartar sauce, but then it wasn't actually a sauce. It was just kind of like coating everything and kind of got lost. That one and or herb sauce, I think would have been great just because of all the fresh veggies that were out there and stuff like that. I think it goes really well with all the fruits and vegetables. I definitely would have gone a different way, but I think essentially those two sauces were like in my wheelhouse. But either way, like, I think that for the amount of time they had, I think they did great.
And then the supper club one?
It's really difficult to want to pick, only because like I feel like with any of them, like I feel like they tried to do the fried fish or they tried to do the like a version of it. But knowing myself, I would have probably just fried fish, but done it like Korean. So I would have done like Korean fried fish nuggets or something, and or like put some inflection on who I am and the way I like to cook into the beef course. You know, whether that be with like fried rice or like doing something that's different, but still fits into there. Also being from Wisconsin, if I had beef, I would have definitely done hash browns or tater tots or something, and then incorporated some kind of other sauce than just like a, like I would have tried to make like some kind of steaky sauce or like a steaky hollandaise or something like that, like Worcestershire hollandaise or something.
Is there more disagreement behind the scenes among the judges than we see? Because sometimes you do get like the sense of like, oh, like in previous seasons anyway, when like Padma and Gail and Tom were not agreeing. And you could kind of see because it was taking them a long time. And then they would say like, well, this has been a while. We got to make a decision.
Right. I think that there are some. And I think as they get deeper into the, like now that we're in the top nine, you know, I think you definitely will have more deliberation because it should get tighter. Unless it's like how it was, where it's like, this is really bad. This was really good. Clean, cut and dry. The bigger thing that happened in ours was that, I mean, obviously like Kristen and I like had some discussion about like the quick fires, but that obviously is for money and less for your standing in the show. And at judges table for the elimination, it definitely becomes like, Tom definitely is like, I'm going to put my foot down. And I feel like this sucks. And here's why. And then everyone else around him is just kind of like not willing to be like, well, actually, Tom Colicchio, you are incorrect, sir. And I thought it was delicious. You know, everyone kind of like goes in and is just like, yeah, true. So the bigger thing that happened off camera was more of the descriptors of why things weren't done very well. And he and I had a whole discussion on cooking steak sous vide because like we're both old guys and we're like, what? Everyone's a bunch of cowards. You know, sear the beef and roast it and you can rest it and reheat it. I mean, that's just literally things that we said. And I think like that kind of stuff happens more. And then there is like a lot more like, you know, there was some of it like with Kamal just being like, this cow's still mooing. Because as soon as they put it down, we're like, this is not cooked, you know? And Chef Joe was like, I usually eat my steaks medium, you know, like, because I don't like it when the fat isn't broken down. And a lot of people are that way. It felt more amateurish than I felt like we would be at for that challenge, except for a few outstanding bites. But again, that's our opinion. And for this one, it was very clear. There was no like, wait, but this fish, even though it was overcooked, it was still really good. You know, we had some of those discussions, like I said, of like, at least he made a dish and didn't just brown potatoes and put chives on. I don't know what that tenderloin dish was, just horrible.
In terms of food competition television, comparing this with something like Iron Chef or Chopped, it seemed to me, especially in recent years, that Top Chef is going for something more and something bigger. You know, I think it's changed some of the culture around how we think about chefs and restaurants and the words people use when they're judging these things. What was it like for you to be sort of a part of that? You're part of this thing that has kind of changed the zeitgeist in certain ways.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. You know, it was very interesting. Earlier in my career, I had a bunch of friends on the show on Top Chef, and everyone's like, what is this show? And then everyone started watching it. And I was like, oh my God, these people that I know are like crushing it on television. And then you see like the after effect of what that is. Now they're like household name chefs, you know, and I'm just like, holy crap, you know, this is all these things that came from that show. And yeah, some people that have won have just gone on to quietly just be awesome in their restaurants and they aren't like nationally known people, but like very recognizable, you know, still from Top Chef. But it just got to the point for me as a chef that I was like focused on the four walls I cook in. I wasn't trying to be out of that for, you know, the number of weeks that you have to be commit to doing Top Chef. And then like, as my career took off and like became what it is, I was like, yeah, you know, I think my time to shoot for Top Chef is kind of over, you know, like now I'm just like old and like, I can't be running around like that. And, and also like, and then I was like, maybe someday I'll be a judge, you know? And then when that day comes, it's incredible to be a part of it. And it is, it's $250,000 plus all of the things that'll do for your career. So I think they have to have like a super high standard. They have to uphold like the brand of Top Chef now, where like, if you go on Chopped or if you go on Iron Chef, you're battling for pride, you know? So you're just like, I'm just here to like cook and entertain, but beat that other guy that's over in the other kitchen, you know, that's it. And when you're doing that, you can literally just make your own food and you're like in the zone. You just have to go fast and hope that you designed a good menu. And on Chopped, it's like three quick fires, you know? So like you have to be like, it's a different kind of sprint but then you win $10,000 or whatever. But even then, it's like, they know what they're doing to you. You know, they're giving you octopus and Braunschweiger and, you know, peaches. And you're like, dope. You know, so they know that they're making you cook like a cartoon character. And if you come out of that, you did great, but you're there for 30 minutes, you know, on someone's television. But like, to be on someone's television for an hour and 15 minutes for 10 weeks.
it's like 14 or 15 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so many.
If you get that far.
Everyone picks their favorites. Everyone gets to know people. You're learning about like background. You have to tell a story on top of building drama, on top of showcasing talented people. I do think that there is a challenge for a show like Top Chef to continue to draw the people that are, you know, James Beard Award level, you know, like they said, it's like James Beard Award winning chefs or nominated, Michelin star chefs or nominated or worked for, owning your own restaurant, being a thing before you get on the show. Whereas before it was like, yeah, I'm a line cook at a famous restaurant in New York, but I just started and now I'm here because I got on the casting and they wanted to build that kind of drama. So I think like keeping the competition, like when you watch someone like Buddha Low and like Stephanie Izard, like in their seasons, they're like way above the level of everyone that's on this season. And that's just real talk, you know, not just because they're winners. But like, even if they were competing against, I mean, that would not be a close situation. And you can recognize that, you know, and I think like, that's the thing with Top Chef, you know, when you're like, it's the best of the people that are on this show that were willing to go through the buzzsaw that is the show. So at the end of the day, they deserve whoever it is, no matter what they did for the season, they deserve that money. They deserve that recognition because like no normal people can do it. Like even for me, like I'm like, no, not for that long, not for over and over again. There would be a point for me where I'm just like, I gotta go home, man. Like I got stuff to do.
Yeah, it is absolutely grueling. And when I first saw Dan Jacobs at the Cheese Festival, it was like kind of an emotional moment because I was like, oh my God, we finally have somebody from Wisconsin on the show. This is incredible. But I was like, how is it for you being this close to your family and not being able to stay with them? Because he's, you know, his family's in Milwaukee, right? He's like 5 miles from his family and he can't see them while he's on the show.
No, yeah. And you only get limited amounts of time to talk and connect. And it just is, it's a bonkers thing to put yourself into. But obviously, like if you can do it and you come out of it, like no one doesn't want recognition and no one doesn't want to get their 15 minutes and see what they can do with it, you know, and on top of it, win $250,000. You know, like that would be amazing. But it's also kind of like, it's a very specific ask for specific people in their careers. So like, I think it's great for Dan. And I know that he wasn't doing it for any of the things. I know that being an activist and getting his face out there for that is important. And that's where he's driven from, just because that's the kind of guy that he is. You know, everything else is great. But like, I know that that was his motivation. So I think it's really cool. And it's hard not to pull for the hometown guy anyway. So I was unbiased, though, I will say, because I was definitely mad about him for that tartar sauce. But then I knew that he was going to win. Like as soon as I saw that he had relish tray, I knew he was going to make pate and I knew he was going to do tartare like right away. So and he crushed it. So it was great.
Well, thank you for representing Madison the way that you did, because I could feel the enthusiasm and it was really important to see.
Yeah, it was great. I wish that some more of the off-color things would have gotten in there. But, you know, I think I'm interested to see, because I'm on the last one too, the last one before they go to the finals. And it's like a bunch of chefs, like it's a lot of us. And they have to cook because there's fewer contestants at that point, but they still have to cook this big meal for, you know, a bunch of chefs from Milwaukee. And they asked me to come back for that. And so I'm interested to see how that turns out, because it's even more voices, you know, to be heard from and that sort of stuff. So we'll see. I'm excited to see where the season goes. And I know it's just going to keep progressing.
There are several Milwaukee chefs who have mentioned that they're on that I haven't seen yet, like Kyle Nall and Greg from Amelinda. And I'm like, I bet. But it's going to be later in the season.
Yeah, they're coming up for sure, because and we're going to see Mushroom Mike. Yeah, so like we're going to see his Sweet Lacoche, and I know there's some other people coming down the pike, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, the last push is going to be crazy. Plus, I know the, like, where the final's going. So, like, it's all crazy.
I am really looking forward to this. Thank you so much for making time today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. And, you know, go Wisconsin. I'm so happy to see us out there on national stage. And so proud of Christine for taking one for the team and coming with us on such short notice and then just crushing it, being her normal, beautiful self. And she's just she has such a great palate, and her mind just goes very quickly, and she can process things so fast. So she did such a good job.
It really came through on camera too. It read beautifully.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you. Have a good day.
This has been The Corner Table, a podcast about food and drink in Madison, Wisconsin, produced by the Capital Times and me, Lindsay Christians. Our music was composed and performed by Patrick Christians, and Dylan Brogan edits the podcast. For more Top Chef content, visit captimes.com for weekly show recaps by the wonderful Stephanie Bedford. And subscribe to our newsletter. It's also called The Corner Table. We share news every week about restaurant openings, pop-ups, special events, and more. You can subscribe at captimes.com/newsletters. Garver Events sponsors this podcast. If you were there for our watch party on April 17th, you know just how much fun it was. And if you missed it, good news, we're hosting another one. May 8th, starting at 7 o'clock, I'll be talking with Molly Moran from Table Wine about what you don't see on camera, the best and worst of the challenges, according to us, and how Wisconsin is showing up. If you've got Top Chef questions, we want to talk about them. Thank you for listening, and until next week, cheers!